Hi, everybody. Dennis Prager here. How do you understand, how does one explain the people who blow themselves up and blow up thoroughly innocent human beings? Is it American imperialism? Is it the war in Iraq? Is it support for Israel? Is it colonialism? Is it poverty? Or is it an actual, simple, basic religious belief that propels these people independent of all those other things? Well, my guest has taken the courageous position that she can understand these people, and that's why she's on. She is Mary Habeck, Associate Professor at the School of Advanced International Studies at Johns Hopkins University. Professor Habeck, welcome to the Dennis Prager Show.
Thanks for having me.
I need to tell you that you have accomplished, if nothing else, and there is more than that, but you have elicited positive responses to your book, Knowing the Enemy. It's a short, concise book, Knowing the Enemy, Jihadist Ideology and the War on Terror, left to right.
Yes, it's a strange phenomenon, one that I'm not used to, I have to say.
Because you're usually what?
Well, I got accused of depending on some sort of hippie flower power by one person, and on the other side, been accused of basically being a Bush sycophant. So
that's a good sign. Good sign. A hippie for Bush. By the way, were you at Yale prior to this?
I was for 11 years.
You're a peripatetic professor.
Yeah. No, Yale decided that they didn't want to encourage military history any longer. And
They're into peace studies?
Well, it's basically cultural history and social history for Yale.
Oh, all right. I respect that. So long as they didn't fire you for peace studies. Anyway, you're at a very prestigious place, I remember, because I was at the what was then known as the School of International Affairs at Columbia. So I remember yours being a competitor school at Johns Hopkins, but you had advanced international studies.
Yeah, you come to our place.
I was the not advanced.
Columbia.
I'm sorry.
You come to our place after Columbia.
Oh, I see. Okay, one graduates to you. All right, that's fair. All right, let us in a nutshell understand the thesis of your book, Knowing the Enemy. Take it away.
Basically, it's an argument that you can understand the guys who carried out the attack on 9/11 by listening to what they're saying rather than trying to analyze events through our lenses. So I just spent about 8 years doing nothing but reading these guys and listening to what they were saying, and decided that most of the explanations for 9/11 were missing the mark.
Go. Let's analyze then every explanation that I have heard and read. Let's begin for no reason, but one that Thomas Friedman, whom I tend to respect on international affairs, we don't share anything domestically, but on international affairs, he does believe we really have an enemy and it's not made up. But he twice at least has attributed Islamic terror largely to the staggering amount of unemployment of young people and poverty in the Islamic world. What's your take on that?
My take on that is you might explain the actions of a few people by something like that. So, individual motivation is actually not something that I address in this book. I'm more looking at the ideas that are motivating the leadership and the group as a whole, and also the dream that they're trying to attract young Muslims to. So, I think unemployment explains individual motivation for some of the ordinary foot soldiers. Although, if you read Mark Sageman's book on this, he says quite clearly that of the 400 terrorists he looked at, very few of them were motivated by economic reasons.
Yeah, and there's a whole new study on that, which I just cited last week by another academic, which shows there's no relationship at all. In fact, most of them come from middle-class families.
Yeah, middle-class families, well-educated, bright prospects, intelligent. Some of them have, many of them, in fact, have advanced degrees. So you're not talking about somebody from the backwoods who suddenly decides to just pick up.
All right, so we knock out the economic motive. The next one, the war in Iraq. That's creating all these jihadists.
Yeah, except I do believe 9/11 occurred before the war in Iraq, and also the attack in Bali occurred before that, and tons of other attacks occurred in the 1980s and 90s that had obviously nothing to do with the war in Iraq.
All right, next, support for Israel.
Yeah, this sounds like a good explanation, except if you read what al-Qaeda and bin Laden himself were actually saying, they don't cite Israel at all, except in passing, and then they put it on the same level as Chechnya, Bosnia, Somalia et al.
God, you certainly dispatch these theories with haste.
Well, you know.
Now, by the way, I agree with you. I'm admiring you. This is not it's said with glee, not with ridicule.
Well, the truth is, nobody's listening to these guys.
No, exactly.
They're listening to themselves.
That's right. I couldn't agree with you more. Let's see. So, Iraq support for Israel. Oh, here's one. I asked many, actually before 9/11, I had a representative from CARE on my program and said, how come there is all this terror coming from the Islamic world? And he said, because of colonialism. What's your answer? I had my answer. What's yours?
Well, you know, I actually begin with Ibn Taymiyyah, who's back in the 13th century before there was European colonialism. And I also take a look at Ibn Abdul Wahhab, the founder of Wahhabism, who began his preaching in the 18th century before colonialism. I'm not saying that colonialism didn't do anything. It certainly pointed out that we were having problems in our society and we have to do something about it. But actually, the first response to colonialism was secularism and modernity. It wasn't a turn towards Islam at all. And the turn towards Islam only came in the 1970s and 80s after it became clear that all these secular, socialist, nationalist, etc., governments that were created in the Middle East were failing miserably.
All right, so colonialism, support for Israel, Iraq, economic. What are the other explanations normally offered? I think we covered them.
Yeah, I think we've got them all.
Oh, wait, there's another one, actually, that offered by Dinesh D'Souza, man from the right, actually, that there's an almost legitimate reaction to the decadent culture of the West.
Yeah, actually, he looks at Said Qutb, who precisely makes this argument. Of course, the decadent society he was talking about was 1948 Northern Colorado. So, you know, what he thought was decadent was people having a dance at a church, not precisely what we would think of as decadent today.
That's where Qutb, tell everybody who Qutb is.
Yeah, you know, Said Qutb is basically the founder of modern jihadism. He was a literary critic and actually a writer, and his parents, though, saw that he was being attracted by radical ideas, so they shipped him off to the States to get a degree. Actually, they got our Department of Education to pay for this. Get a master's degree in education at the university. Well, then it was the College of Northern Colorado in Greeley, Colorado. And while he was there, he was so turned off by this decadence and repulsed by the kind of life that people lived in Northern Colorado that he became a real radical.
Well, I'll tell you, folks, if Northern Colorado 1948 is probably as close to Leave It to Beaver as real America ever
got. Yeah, I think there are more cows there than people.
I'm sorry?
I think there are more cows there than people.
Well, aside from that, even the people who were there, we're not talking about hippies.
No.
Radicals or free love advocates. This is 1948 rural Colorado.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you read stuff that was written by Muslims who visited Europe in the Middle Ages, they were repulsed by things back then. They talked about women being out on the streets. Horrors, you know, and women walking around by themselves and uncovered. It was just, you know, the same things they say today.
Folks, I really hope you're listening carefully. This is truly significant stuff. Do you read Arabic?
I am learning Arabic. I'm about at a first-year reading knowledge.
It took me a year to learn how to read just the alphabet. It took me 1 week to learn the Russian alphabet and a year to learn the Arabic alphabet. So I have total sympathy for you. Yeah. It is not an easy language.
Yeah, all this stuff that I look at has been translated into English. In fact, it's hard to find stuff that hasn't been translated in English. And anything I found that I couldn't get in English, I just had research assistants translate for me.
Yeah, good. No, I was just curious. I don't believe for a minute that invalidates what you're saying. Everything, your this point that you just made is new to me about medieval Muslim visitors to Europe thinking it was decadent.
Yeah, Bernard Lewis.
Yeah, go on.
I'm sorry to keep interrupting you.
No. I'm loving what you're saying. This is eye opening. Let me tell everybody your book because I want you to answer that when we come back. I'm speaking to Mary Habeck, H-A-B-E-C-K, definitely putting up this book at PragerRadio.com. This is a brief, powerful explanation. Knowing the Enemy is the name of the book by Mary Habeck, who's at the School of Advanced, International Studies at the Johns Hopkins University. We'll return in a moment, and any challenge or call you want, 1-8-PRAGER-776. Let's keep the jazz going. Professor Habeck, are you ever introduced at class with jazz?
No, I haven't, although I use this music for parties.
You do?
Yeah.
Take Five, specifically Take Five?
Yes, I love Take Five.
You're a kindred spirit, Mary Habeck. She is a professor at School of Advanced, somewhat advanced and highly advanced international studies, Johns Hopkins University, and in all seriousness, this may be about as good a one-volume introduction to why we're having this problem with Islamic terror as anything out right now. Knowing the Enemy is the book. Now, we have gone through, I want to review this for my listeners, we have gone through all of the reasons that are given outside of within Islam itself. Economic reasons, the Iraqi war, support for Israel, colonialism, decadent culture in the West. You've answered them all rather effectively. So what is the reason?
Well, the reason that they give repeatedly for attacking us is that they hate liberalism and democracy. That is the ideology that they think animates us. And they hate the fact that we're spreading it in the Islamic world. And they believe that the U.S. is behind every single evil in their society. So, you know, we support Israel, we support the Saudi government, we support Mubarak, you know, you name it. But that's sort of just the manifestation of this deeper problem that we represent this evil ideology that's the precise antithesis of Islam.
So this is where, I guess, your critics, and it's hard for me to imagine you're a conservative, only because you're a professor in the humanities, so I just assume the odds are you're not. But this is probably where you get attacked, because after all, President Bush has said they hate us for our values.
Yeah, it's funny because I don't think that he was reading the same sorts of things that I've been reading. But, you know, basically, I mean, there's more complications to it than that, but basically that's what they have said. And Said Qutb made that argument back in the 1950s and 60s, and before the U.S. was even known as a supporter of Israel or had gotten really involved in the Middle East.
Yep, that's what it appears to be. 1-8-PRAGER-776. Now, the $64,000 question becomes your stance on whether or not this is intrinsic to Islam.
Yeah, my stance is no. Islam itself, as it's practiced today by the vast majority of Muslims, is nothing like what these guys are talking about. Now, if you're talking about Islam 1,400 years ago, I can't really tell you. Nobody knows what Islam was really like back then. So the real fight that's going on is these guys are saying we represent authentic Islam, and every other Muslim out there is a sinner or possibly not even a real Muslim, and you either come over to our side or else we'll kill you. So I've become convinced in the last 2 years that the real fight is inside Islam itself. And
yes, I've been saying that. It drives me nuts. Of course, that's where the fight is. The problem is that we don't see anybody fighting them. I'm not saying there aren't. It's that we don't see anybody.
Yeah, we don't see them, I think, for the same reason you don't hear about good news from Afghanistan and Iraq. It's kind of not the way that the press works. They think it's basically their business to report disasters, death, destruction. You know, if it bleeds, it leads really does form a lot of their thinking.
All right, then you give us good news that isn't reported.
Yeah, well, for instance, a year and a half ago, there was a huge 200,000-person march in Morocco against terrorism carried out in the name of Islam back in November of 2005.
Hold on. When was that?
That was a year and a half ago.
Okay, go on. I have at least as much disdain for the news media in the West as you do, but it's hard for me to imagine 200,000 Moroccans demonstrated against Islamic terror and nobody reported it.
It was reported, but in the European press and in the Middle Eastern press. It wasn't reported in our press. Yeah.
God, it's I'm going to look into that immediately, but it's worse than I thought, the American news media, and I really don't think it's good. Okay, go on. That's good news. Next. Give me more good news.
Yeah, there was a similar sort of march in Jordan after the attacks there. But
that was only because it was against Jordanians.
Yeah, but immediately after that, support for Al-Qaeda in Jordan went through the floor. So this was seen as something systemic. It wasn't seen as, oh, they've just attacked us and it doesn't have anything to do with the rest of the world. They actually connected it directly with Al-Qaeda and their attacks elsewhere and said, huh, I guess we had misunderstood.
All right. When I ask the question, and I have not taken a position on this, when I ask you the question of intrinsic to Islam, and you answer me that the great majority of Muslims do not subscribe to this ideology, I'm going to ask you every honest question that I could come to. Number one, I won't even put it in that way. Is there enough in the Quran and in Islamic theological history, if you will, and religious practice to back what is happening, to back the terror?
Sure. The thing is that you can find just about anything you want in the Quran. I could quote you like 10 verses that say things like, to you, your religion, and to me, mine. And
there shall be no coercion in matters
exactly.
of faith. Yep.
Yeah, and you can also find, I think there's something like 110 verses that talk about fighting and killing. But the issue is, what do Muslims do with that today? Not what did they do with it 1,000 years ago? Because there's a very, very important principle in Islam known as consensus or ijma, which basically says whatever the majority of the learned people, that is the ulema, or whatever the majority of the community say is the truth, that is the truth. So if they say that Islam is about X, and the majority agree
with that... All right, but what are the ulema saying today?
Well, the ulema are basically agreeing that this doesn't have much to do with Islam.
Well, that's where we... It's not that we differ, it's that I have not seen that. Al-Azhar hasn't said that, and that's the leading voice of Islam in the world, the university in Cairo.
Yeah, Al-Azhar has not, though, said that they support Al-Qaeda either. They've said that they support things like resistance in Israel, whatever that means.
Well, we know what it means. It means blowing up Israelis.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Me, where are the ulema that have said point blank? I mean, the majority of the mosques in the United States, in fact, supported the fatwa against Salman Rushdie.
Yeah, let me give you the example, the few examples that I know about, but I'm making, I guess, a broader sort of statement about Muslims in general. So if you're looking for the consensus, maybe, you know, pointing specifically to the ulema in one country isn't the way to go about it. But the ulema, for instance, in Morocco, definitely do not support these guys. The ulema in Tunisia don't support these guys. The ulema in Algeria don't support. The ulema in Turkey don't. You know,
All right. Hold on. We'll get more good news, hopefully, and take calls. Mary Habeck and the book, Knowing the Enemy. This is Dennis Prager. Ah, this is bracing stuff. Dennis Prager here talking on the Jigsaw Health Newsmaker line with Professor Mary Habeck. And for answers to your health puzzle, call Jigsaw. Actually, go online, jigsawhealth.com. Mary Habeck, professor at Johns Hopkins University in International Studies. The book, the important book, Knowing the Enemy, she just demolishes all of these other excuses and says, look, it's within the world of Islam, if not necessarily intrinsic to the religion itself. And I've asked you for, and one more point, she says, as I have been saying, what is the view from the New York to the L.A. Times and everywhere in between in our media, the view is, it's something that we do or something Israel does or something that Britain does that foments the Islamic terror, when in fact it precedes all of this, the ideology that gave rise to this. And this is coming from this professor at the Johns Hopkins. And do you... you were talking to me about how the battle, and this is what I believe, the battle is within Islam. Who will win? And that is why I'm not terribly sanguine. The reasons for optimism are not great because, well, you say the ulema in Tunisia, that is the Islamic leadership in Tunisia, Morocco, and Algeria have come out. I'd like to know if they have come out against all terror in the name of Allah, including Israelis and including Americans.
I don't know if I can speak to that one. I've just been keeping track sort of who is putting out official statements, in support of what's going on in the war on terror. I know, though, I'm concerned about that as well, because, I think there are some positive things out there, but let me just say that I'm not looking at this with rosy-colored glasses. I do know that there are problems out there as well. As you pointed out, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Yemen, Sudan, there's a whole list of countries I could point out where the ulema are basically controlled by the extremists. Pakistan even is pretty deeply divided, but the extremists are making gains there. That's one negative thing that's going on. The second negative thing is that the extremists believe in proselytizing. So over time, they're winning more and more followers to their side, whereas the moderates, the mainstream Muslims, the traditional Muslims, don't believe in proselytizing other Muslims. So, gradually they're...
Well, also, people. They get killed. Yeah, I meant to tell my listeners, Alan, we have to find this story. I wanted to speak of the hero of the month, or the hero of the year, or of the day, a Pakistani teacher who said that terror is wrong, and they beheaded him.
Yeah, that happens pretty much all over the world, and it's been going on for about 40 years. Well, 30 years for sure. So... over time, it's simply made it impossible for moderates to say anything on the public stage without fear for themselves or their families.
So you don't even have to answer this because you have to go back to your colleagues. But you realize, or do you realize, that what you're saying goes against the conventional wisdom of the entire leftist intelligentsia in America?
Yeah, because I'm just looking at the way things are. That's basically what
I want
to do.
Those of us who are not on the left always say that a serious appreciation of reality means you leave the left. But I won't put you on the spot further. You have to go back to your colleagues. Let me take some calls here from around the country, and we begin in Philadelphia. And Greg, hello, Greg. You're on with Professor Habeck and Dennis Prager.
Hi, Professor Dennis. Thanks for taking my call. I love your show.
Great. Thank you. I love it, too.
I'm sure you do. Professor, a little bit ago, you made the statement that no one knows what Islam was like 1,400 years ago, but it's been my, from what I've read anyway, Muhammad spread the faith by the sword, and in fact, it took until the late 1400s for the Spaniards to, not completely, but just about finally kick them out of Spain. And it seems to me that Islam has been at war trying to spread itself since its inception.
Professor?
Yeah, the issue here is that there's a difference between what Muhammad did and what those who immediately followed him did. It wasn't actually Muhammad who went off to Spain or India or any of these other places. It was the people who followed him. And they believed they were interpreting correctly what he had said. But, Muhammad didn't create, for instance, a state. He didn't lead people off to battles of conquest. Almost every single thing that he was personally involved in was... In
right,
fact,
but to be fair, Greg was not talking about Muhammad. He was talking about early Islam.
Yeah.
And you agree with him then?
Well, the point is, I guess that, and you can see this in the Islamic world, there are people who are saying, look, let's go back to the way Muhammad did things, not to the people who...
All right, we'll be back in a moment. Mary Habeck, the book Knowing the Enemy. I'm Dennis Prager. You're listening to the Dennis Prager Show, and on the Jigsaw Health Newsmaker line is Professor Mary Habeck. Find your answers to health puzzles at jigsawhealth.com. Mary Habeck has written this important book, Knowing the Enemy. Really important. It's a good one, really good one volume take. It'll explain to you why all of the reasons given by, and she doesn't have any political agenda here. I'm adding this. All the reasons given by our liberal elite from the university to the newspaper, oh, it's America, it's imperialism, colonialism, it's unemployment, it's support for Israel, it's the Iraq War. No, it's an ideological issue, but she doesn't say that it's inherent to the Quran. But it did start early, as the last caller from Philadelphia, Mary Habeck, did point out, and so does Ephraim Karsh. I'm sure you've read him.
Yes.
He's at Cambridge, is it?
Yeah, I think that's where he's at now.
Yeah, and he wrote Islamic Imperialism. He's a major scholar of Islam, that from the outset there was a sword-based spread of the religion.
That's right. I don't want to try to sugarcoat things, because the people who immediately followed Muhammad believed that they were correctly understanding what his mission in life was. But my point is this. If you want to go back and find something that's nonviolent as your way forward, you can also find that in the Quran and in Muhammad's life. So it really, again, depends on what you want to find. So Muslims today have a choice. And again, I agree with you that this is mostly about something, you know, an internal dynamic in the Islamic world. Which of these groups is going to be able to make the argument that we have the authentic interpretation of Islam? So
yes, and that is why it is so sad that the Western media, and including many politicians, have anointed CARE to represent Muslims rather than moderate Muslims. It's a suicidal impulse in the Western world that exists, and it baffles me.
Yeah. We have a little teeny bit of an issue, I think, ourselves, because the interpreters, the people who are looking at this phenomenon, tend to take sides, I believe, based on their own religious backgrounds. So, for instance, somebody like John Esposito, I don't want to say anything bad about anybody, so this is not a criticism of people, but John Esposito, who is a liberal Christian himself, tends to take liberal Islam as the norm and the authentic Islam, whereas somebody like Robert Spencer, who is an Orthodox or traditional Christian, tends to take Orthodox traditional Islam as the norm and the authentic Islam. In a lot of ways, their arguments say more about their beliefs than about what's going on within Islam.
Right, but you, as you say, there's no reason for rose-colored glasses here with regard to that battle. Let's go to more calls. Salt Lake City, Utah, Sandra, Dennis Prager, and Mary Habeck. Hi.
Hi. What a pleasure to talk to you. I just finished reading the book Infidel by Ayaan Hirsi Aliyah.
Right, that's correct.
Okay, mm-hmm. Professor, are you familiar with that one?
I am familiar with her work. I haven't read her book yet.
Okay, she claims that Islam, and she's probably in her late 30s now, living in the United States, but she claims that the biggest problem with Islam is that it's so cruel and so restrictive, and especially to women. They still, today, they kill women for an honor code that they have. But her point, I think maybe her basic premise, is that she was taught from a small child in Somalia and Saudi Arabia that they need to spread Islam to the world, that everything else is evil.
Yeah. I don't want to sound as if, you know, I have rosy-colored glasses on here. The way Islam is practiced in places like Somalia, Sudan, Yemen, Saudi Arabia, these are all really problematic. So, that was the area in which she grew up, in which she was raised. So the Islam she was exposed to, that's definitely not the sort of thing that we hope wins out in this fight over authenticity.
But the fight is there. That's the point you're making, and you're making it well. All righty, let's go to Sarasota, Florida. Mike. Hello, Mike. Dennis Prager, Professor Mary Habeck.
Hi, Dennis. Hi, Professor Habeck. My impression of the anti-American terrorists is that they're rejecting our values and our lifestyle. And, I mean, we have a conservative administration, and they're trying to take over a country and force our lifestyle and our way of life on them. It's just bad policy, in my opinion, because we're fighting these people, and now we're trying to force our values on them, and their values are exactly... That's why they're fighting us, because they don't want our values and our lifestyle.
Yeah, but even if you were right, though, Mike, Professor Habeck has already addressed that, in that this ideology precedes the birth of George W. Bush by 100 years.
Sure, but our lifestyle is more of a capitalist lifestyle, and devout Muslims wouldn't even take interest. So to try to force capitalism on them, go ahead, Dennis.
Yeah, no. You may be right that it's impossible, and here is an irony here. The people who believe that Muslims want freedom as much as non-Muslims are depicted as conservative and as aggressive. It's a separate subject, and only for another time, Mike, and so we'll have to do it another time. But it's ironic that the people who make the war, who support the war, actually believe that Muslims want freedom. Maybe they don't. Maybe they don't. That's the left's position, that they don't want freedom, and that we have all this chutzpah trying to say that they do. That's the irony. Let's see here. Let's go to San Francisco and Beth. Hello, Beth.
Hi, Dennis. It's an honor to speak with you.
Thank you.
I just want to comment. I hear Dinesh D'Souza and other Westerners, including, I believe, your previous caller, Mike, act like they want to apologize for our lifestyle. But I read a book describing the inner workings of the royal family in Saudi Arabia, just for example.
Oh, and believe that's far more decadent. So true. Mary Habeck, I'm going to take the last segment to take some calls and to give some thoughts. I truly hope everybody reads your book, Knowing the Enemy.
Oh, thanks.
And what's your next book?
How about
Knowing Our Friends?
No, it's called Attacking America, How Jihadis Are Fighting Their 200-Year
War. All right, you let us
West.
Know when that's on, and we'll be back in a moment. You have just heard an interview with Mary Habeck, and she was terrific. The book is terrific. It's so painful to think about the widespread, utter nonsense that you are subjected to every day in the mainstream media about the causes of Islamic terror. And to have this from an academic with no political agenda is so... She said, well, all I did is look at reality. That's the point. All right, let me take... There's a call here I wanted to take from the beginning. George Folsom, California. Hi, George. Dennis Prager.
Yeah, Dennis, great program as always.
Thank you.
I'm looking at a slide. I do counterterrorism training for law enforcement in California. And you struck a chord with me earlier when you talked about Saeed Al-Khatoob and his feeling about America, you know, back then in the 50s, and you talked about Leave It to Beaver.
Yeah.
My slide has a picture of Ozzie and Harriet, so we're on the same wavelength.
Exactly. And that was considered decadent to this Islamic view of the world.
Right. And next to Ozzie and Harriet is Eminem. So I said, can you imagine how angry they are now?
Exactly. Well said. I'm glad you do that. Thank you for your work, George. This you must provide this hour. You go to PragerRadio.com and just download it, podcast it, whatever, and just provide it to any of your relatives or friends who believe that it is something that we in the West have done, or we Americans or the Israelis have done, that has created this Islamic terror, this ideology. That's the whole point of this woman's book, Knowing the Enemy. She has studied it. It's just not true. It precedes all of this. If Israel were destroyed tomorrow by Ahmadinejad, it would only increase Islamic terror, because then that ideology would say, look, we're winning. We can do it. We can prevail. Where are 1 million Muslims? Where are they? Demonstrating around the world against the blowing up of Muslims. Do you know what the latest is? Americans allowed a car with two children in it to get through a checkpoint because there were two children in the back seat. The suicide bomber got out of the car and then blew it up to kill pedestrians with the two children inside. This is the level of the evil that we fight, and I can't even get most anti-war people to acknowledge that we're fighting evil. Instead, I'm told, well, Bush is evil. The battle is within Islam, and the battle is within the United States of America. Ezra, Don, Frank, Olia, Clark, I really wish I could have gotten your calls. Be that as it may, read the book, Knowing the Enemy. Can't fight what you don't know. You're listening to The Dennis Prager Show. I thank you for doing so. Don't go away.